This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And good morning, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. So we're a day, 24 hours or so, 30 hours or so from Game 5, and we're already playing the blame game against with the Kevin Durant situation. Fair or unfair? Listen, there's a lot of speculation as to what went down and how he was diagnosed and where the blame lies in terms of where Kevin Durant is right now, which is an Achilles tear, likely out a full year, heading into free agency this summer. Well, what are the options for him right now? Is it Steve Kerr and the Warriors? Is it Durant himself? Was it the media? Was it the fans? All the speculation. But is it fair? We'll examine that coming up throughout the morning, because Game 6 on Thursday night is going to be the final game at Oracle, and a really good chance for Golden State to tie this series up and force a deciding Game 7. And win or lose, the guts to come back in a series, to fight back in a series in which they were getting beat, if they can do that Thursday night, it's going to make these NBA Finals pretty epic. But the cloud that is surrounding it right now was Durant and now is Durant based on the injury Monday night. It was bad, and it leads to some bad things for him going forward, but looking around to see who is to blame for Durant's injury, there's so many different angles in which you could take this story, but nobody really knows the truth. We all want to take our shots, I guess, at the people we want to take our shots to. Jalen Rose, for example, blame the media. Blame the media for speculating on Durant's injury so much it forced him back onto the court, saying that the media got their pound of flesh. He's using the terminology wrong. I'll explain that coming up. But you have others that are blaming the Golden State Warriors organization, the training staff. We speculated it yesterday that if you go through the entire timeline of Durant's injury from early May till now, it seems weird that the time that he could come back, the earliest time that he could come back, simply coincided with a must-win elimination Game 5 on a Monday night in Toronto. We'll examine this a little more. We'll also get to Jalen Rose's comments about the media. Are they at fault for this, for speculating too much? A lot of blame to go around on the Durant issue.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so the blame game on Durant. We like to do this. We got some time between the games, right? Game 5 is on a Monday, Game 6 on a Thursday. What else are we going to do with our time in between? Break down the X's and O's? Who needs to do that? We've been doing that all year. Now, let's get to the good stuff. Who's to blame for Kevin Durant? Who has to go to the chopping block for this injury? Man, a lot of speculation out there. Jalen Rose was speaking on ESPN. He said that the media got their pound of flesh. He's using the term incorrectly. It sounds cool, but he's using the term incorrectly. Now, listen, I think he's a very, very smart individual who knows a lot more about basketball than I will ever know, but he's using this terminology wrong. When you look for a pound of flesh, here's the thing. The terminology is used when you are seeking revenge on something. You are seeking to extract some measure of revenge on something. You're doing it maliciously. You're doing it with an intent to make, you know, some sort of statement. Again, more or less revenge. The term doesn't fit here when he says the media got their pound of flesh, because we weren't looking for it. We weren't looking for revenge on Kevin Durant or the Warriors or anything like that. The problem with the Durant injury from the media perspective has always been, and I'm not trying to push blame away from the media and sort of their conversation and what we've had over the last month. But the reality is Golden State didn't handle this injury well. Right? They kept implying that Durant was almost a game time decision all the time. They never gave us a feel for what this injury was. So all of a sudden, when you're not telling us how severe this is, we're speculating on how severe it is without knowing, and then wondering, hey, listen, is there an opportunity that he's coming back at a point when you absolutely need him? Like, I don't know, an elimination game on the road? So the idea that the media was after Durant and Golden State and they deserve all the blame for this is irresponsible on Jalen Rose's part. And again, I like Jalen Rose a lot, and I think he says some very insightful things. This is not one of them. And look, fans and the media had been speculating when Durant was coming back. Go back to game 6 of the Western Conference semifinals. There was a conversation, would he play then? A day after the injury, because we just didn't know. He needed evaluation. Okay, he wasn't going to play in game 6, likely not a game 7 if there was to be a game 7, but certainly he was going to come back in the Portland series, right? No, he's not going to play in game 1, not going to play in game 2. Maybe game 3? Nah, not that one either. How about game 4? They don't really need him. Can he come back then? Nah, better not. You know, this is pretty good. They don't really need him. Let him just wait till the finals. Game 1? Nah. Game 2? Nah. Game 3? Nah. Game 4, now finally game 5. That's the game we played the entire way with Durant's injury. Now, should Golden State have come out right away and said, look, he's out for the entire postseason? Well, it's possible they didn't know that. It's possible the medical staff didn't want to make that assessment because they didn't know, right? They did their own evaluation on the injury and felt like this is a recoverable injury that he should at some point, well, with the calendar being what it is, could come back and play. But this isn't going to be on the media, as Jalen Rose likes to put it, because in the end, this is not a media decision. This was the decision made by Golden State and Kevin Durant. How in the world is the media and the fans responsible for Durant playing? If Durant can't play, was he supposed to go, well, you know, the media's been bugging me this whole time? I know he's sensitive to criticism, but let's be honest, to imply that the media is to blame because Durant played a basketball game in which he was not medically cleared to play, or should not have been medically cleared to play, that is a huge stretch. A huge stretch to make. And again, Rose implying that there was a pound of flesh to be gained by the media. For what? For what? Where? As a member of the media, tell me the vindictive nature I have against Kevin Durant. Why was I after Kevin Durant? Why was Marcus Thompson after Kevin Durant? Or any other the reporters that cover Golden State on a regular basis? Where's our vindictiveness coming from that you're implying that we wanted this to happen and we forced this to happen and we're satisfied? Because we got our pound of flesh. Again, you're using the term wrong. It sounds hard. It sounds great. It sounds nefarious, but it's used incorrectly. He's wrong. If you're looking for blame, I don't think there really is one. Did Golden State pressure Durant to play? Maybe. Did Durant go out there feeling pressured to play? We'll wait and see. Maybe he speaks out on this. Maybe he doesn't say a word. But Durant is a grown man, and he knows his body better than any trainer or any doctor. If he doesn't play, if he didn't go out and play, yep, criticism may have been fallen on him if the disgruntledness in the locker room was true. But he is a grown man, and no one forced him to go out there. No, nobody in the Warriors, in an NBA that is amazingly player-friendly, nobody forced him to play. He went out there to play, to try to help his team. Maybe he was cleared and shouldn't have been cleared. Maybe he felt like he could go. Maybe all of these possibilities are floating out there. But the media didn't get its pound of flesh because we didn't hate Durant enough to want it. No, the media is an easy target because sometimes we're a little hard. Sometimes people write columns that say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Sometimes we give the fans a level of speculation that they start having, and then they start making comments, and all of a sudden there's this social media storm that's brewing. But to say that the Warriors reacted to that and Durant reacted to that, and that's the main reason, I think is a little short-sighted. Did it play a factor? Maybe. But this is where you're talking about game five. You're talking about an elimination game. If you're going to come back, that's the game to come back. So if Durant felt that he was close to playing, if the Warriors felt like he was close to playing, when do you play? What are you going to wait for? Game seven? If you could go in game five, you go in game five. And here's the missing point. Okay? Did in the 12 minutes that he played basketball, did it look like he was limping around, playing at 60%, hobbling on one foot? No. He played great. He hit his shots, looked good, made some great defensive plays. Then he just got injured. He just got re-injured. And that's all that happened. But we need a fall person. Bob Myers wants to take it. Let him have it. Because he doesn't want to put it on the training staff, who he said there were good people. Maybe he doesn't want to put it on Steve Kerr. I thought Jason Whitlock, though, on Fox, he had a really good point. He said, listen, Kerr speaks out on everything. Politics, immigration, what's going on in the White House, all this stuff. He speaks out on all of these topics. Yet, when it came to the Durant injury and all of the ramifications around it, he was relatively silent. So there's a lot of blame going around. I don't know if it's really fair, other than to just put in context that here was an athlete who tried to come back to help his team win a championship. This wasn't a regular season game. This wasn't all right, we're closing out the year, we're trying to get the number one seed, or we got it wrapped up and we're going to play him and he got hurt. This was game five in an elimination game. Season's over if you lose. Championship dreams are shot. You play 82 games, all the games in the postseason, to get a shot at a ring. Again, if you're going to come back, that's the game to come back to. It just was unfortunate. It was just unfortunate. But this idea that the media, my God, that we're so elated that we got our revenge on Kevin Durant. Where is this coming from? My God, is it because it just makes a good soundbite? I mean, again, Rose knows more about this than I will ever know, but the terminology is very hard. It's just very hard to wrap my hand around. All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about Game 6 coming up, but we got some cool news out of the NFL we're going to get to, because your August, I should say, just got a lot more fun. That's coming up next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Oh, Ron, are you ready for August? John Gruden and the Raiders, baby, on Hard Knocks.
Thank God.
I am so excited. It could have been the Redskins. I didn't really care about
that.
Could have been
Lions.
The Lions.
I heard Lions was making a climb for it. And
I didn't want the Lions.
God.
No. Oh, God, the storylines coming out of Oakland. I mean, they write themselves. This is going to be so fun.
Yes.
John Gruden.
What do you focus on? Like, with Raiders being Hard Knocks, what's the main storyline?
Okay, if I'm the producer of Hard Knocks and I'm like, okay, what do I want to showcase during training camp? I think I got three things that I want to showcase. One, anything Gruden says or does.
Yes.
Any of the quirkiness of John Gruden. Anything he does. Like if he eats Lucky Charms out of a waffle cone in the morning, I don't care. Whatever it is that he does. Two, Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict. I want to see any sort of relationship that they have.
Is that kind of like 1A, 1B?
Yeah, right? I mean, getting along, talking.
You want to
follow
them separately.
You knocked me cold in the playoffs, right? Yeah, right?
You want to follow them separately, but you also want to follow them together. Do they even interact with each other?
If they interact, you want cameras all over it. If you bring them aside, ask about the relationship, where they hated each other, when they were division rivals, now on the same team. Oh, this could be fun. And three, Nathan Peterman's on this team.
I mean, come on. Let's have some fun with Nathan Peterman, Mr. Interception. Let's see John Gruden try to coach him up, tell him how great he's going to be.
See, I want to know, does John Gruden hold a quarterback camp?
Yeah, that's good.
Remember
true.
All the ones he used to do for the ESPN? Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Does Sit he do there, that?
Just across the table watching, breaking down film with the incoming quarterback?
Do they? Does he cut people differently than other coaches on Hard Knocks? Like when other coaches cut players, they're like, well, you know, John, it's a numbers game. You're certainly talented. We really, what if John Gruden's like, let me tell you what, guy, you got to get out of this business. You just don't have it. You're not a football player. Get out. My advice is get out. Go work at anything else. Just don't come back here. Do something else with your life. You ain't going to be playing professional football anytime soon. That would be kind of fun. Fantastic. I doubt it. He'll be just like, he'll tell everybody how awesome they are and how they don't give up on your dreams, blah, 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 blah. They'll just be like everybody else. But, oh, still, moving to Vegas. Oh, gosh, there's so many different things they could talk about. Oh, this is going to be gold, baby, gold.
I hope they spend a not a whole lot of time, just a little bit amount of time following, always Prince Adam, but it's a... Mark, was it Mark Allen?
Mark Davis.
Mark Davis, thank you.
Yeah,
I don't know
Mark
why
Davis.
Allen came from.
Yeah, what about Richie Incognito?
Oh,
that's
my
a
God.
Terrible
that's,
signing. But
yeah, that's...
following him around for a bit.
Does he just show up in a straitjacket?
I know.
Do they, when they do drills, do they just put him in a padded room?
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Do you think they bring up, like, do you think they talk about the Khalil Mack trade from last year at all? Like, talking about... You know, maybe Gruden talks about it or something like that. I don't know. It could be something like that. They're also going to Canada to play the Packers in Winnipeg for a preseason game. That'll be kind of fun. Gruden in Canada. Asking people if they speak English in Canada. Things like that. Like funny things like that. You could do something awesome. You know, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of things that they could do with that. But anyway, Hard Knocks is going to have the Raiders, and we're all better off for it. It's about time. Look, the Browns last year was great. I mean, it was great. I thought it was one of the best seasons they've had.
Gave but us this Coach could be Wiley.
This could be the best. This could be the best.
I'm just glad they did it because, there were rumors that they were going to hold off and wait for the move to Vegas.
That's right. Right. You know, the initial... year in Vegas, look, where are they going to hold training camp when they're in Vegas? Probably somewhere in California where it's cooler. Not going to go in the 175 degree heat of Vegas in the summer.
Nah, of course not.
They could do it in Reno. I could go up to Reno, but nah, they'll probably just do it in California. Just be like the Cowboys. Or maybe they build a training facility indoors. Just be like, we're doing it inside. 100,000 degrees. When I lived in Vegas, it was so fun. The football season, like the high school football season, like would start to be like 102. And then by the end of the year, it'd be cold. It was like, it was just the degree of difference. It was crazy. It was crazy. But nevertheless, Vegas in the summertime, you can't have training camp. So, do it this year. Have Hard Knocks this year. But, look, the other teams are fine, but they just didn't have the same story angles. And that's really what you want. Look, we get the formula. HBO, we understand the formula. We're not looking for that anymore. We're not looking for how camp works. My God, you've done 10 seasons of this. We get it. We know how camp works. And your formula is the same for every one of these episodes. You talk about these guys who have big dreams and hopes, and they go to camp, try to make it big, try to land a roster spot. You find three or four of them that you're going to follow, and we're all going to get to know and fall in love with. Whether it's an early draft pick, or somebody that's got a quirky habit, or somebody that's got a good personality, you find a couple, and we get to know their families and their background and everything like that, and then we follow them along on the journey. And then Liev Schreiber talks about them at camp, struggling to catch a pass, or struggling to make a tackle, or struggling to find the block, or whatever it is that they're doing. And then after a while, we go to the game the preseason games, and you again focus on those players, how good they did, how bad they did, getting yelled at by the coach, getting praised by the coach, and then there's cut day, and did they make the team or not? We get the formula. We understand. But what you need to bring us on with these teams, and I'm glad they're doing it now, is give us the ones that have got tremendous storylines that we're interested in seeing. Like, that's the key. Like, I thought one of the more boring years, and I know there's a few that enjoyed it because people in my family liked it, but I thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers season was terrible. I was bored. I didn't care about anything that was going on with the Buccaneers that year. They had one time like, oh, great, a snow cone machine truck came to camp. Big deal. I don't care. But the Raiders, all of those things that we brought up, Gruden, Antonio Brown, Richie Incognito, Nathan Peterman's on the team, for crying out loud. This is going to be great.
Can we hope for Marshawn Lynch just signing with them?
Now, yeah, what about that? What about that? What if that happens?
Just because.
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch should do it just to be, you know.
Their main running back, Josh Jacobs, is a rookie.
Yeah.
So, you know, he needs to learn under somebody with experience. Marshawn Lynch would be perfect.
There you go.
Just writing stories for him.
This is going to be great.
I'm looking at their preseason schedule. Game one against the Rams at the Coliseum. Cannot wait to see if they dissect the Coliseum at all.
Yeah.
Play it on a baseball field.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic. Like I said, this is writing itself right now.
Yeah, they should call us. We can just give them a couple storylines.
That Antonio Brown, Vontaze Burfict thing, I can't wait. I see how they play that one out. Those two hated each other. My God. Juju Smith-Schuster got involved in it. He was so upset with the way those two went at it.
Day one of pads, do those two go at it?
Yeah, totally.
That's what we want to see.
It's good. I tell you what, I can't. It's just a brilliant move by HBO.
How quickly does Antonio Brown diva out?
Yep, completely. Completely, where he's really getting ticked off of being a Raider. When he starts realizing that Derek Carr is not Ben Roethlisberger, I can't wait.
Or if he's taking passes from Nathan Peterman just to give him a run.
What about, yes. I wouldn't mind Antonio Brown talking about playing with the Steelers. You know? Yeah. This is great.
Yeah, how many people does he throw under the bus?
Right, completely.
That first
interview.
Talk to you. And they ask him like, so, you know, how do you feel? I mean, he'll probably have Le'Veon Bell's back.
Yeah, true. Totally true. And then you do that thing where the camera like zooms, the audio zooms in on two players just talking on the sidelines. Antonio Brown going, oh, Ben, what a jerk. Oh, couldn't stand him. Man, do you like playing with him at all, though? Would he throw you a good pass? Oh, no, he could throw good passes. Don't get me wrong. He's a good quarterback. But, God, what a jerk in the locker room. I know, I hate that. I heard that, too. And then leave Shriver in the background. Antonio Brown, the disgruntled wide receiver of the Pittsburgh Steelers, landed in Oakland as a trade, and now arrives with John Gruden. It's just going to be cool. I'm so excited. This is thrilling. God, don't give me a boring NFL team. Give me the Raiders.
So you go to John Gruden and say, man, you're way better than Tomlin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. John Gruden teasing him. Hey, you could get away with that with Tomlin, couldn't you, Antonio? Antonio Brown, let you get away with that.
I'm hoping Gruden has like a team meeting beforehand and lays down the locker room rules and says no cell phone and points at Antonio Brown.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, completely. Yes, that'll be great. I wonder if they do any of those crazy songs, you know, like get the rookies up there singing. All that good stuff.
They'll do
that. We'll find out.
They'll do that. That's all the hokey stuff they always do.
We'll find out. It'll be wonderful. So yeah, good on HBO. Look at this. Like I said earlier, this show is a good show. The problem is it is repetitive. I mean, it is the same formula, but the reason it can be successful and you can do it every single year is because of what we just mentioned. Every year is different storylines. You're not doing the same thing, or you shouldn't be doing the same thing. You should be giving us the best possible team that gives us the best possible stories. That's why it's hard for me to believe that if you're a playoff team, you don't have to do this. Look, I'm sure these teams don't want the cameras everywhere they go. Right. I mean, and some players have used this format to extend their brand, if you will, to increase their notoriety. Some unknown guys have become, you know, known through this show, which is kind of neat. But I'm sure most coaches are like, look, we don't want this. So the NFL said, all right, if you do well, or whatever, you don't have to be a part of this. But it is too bad, because there are some really interesting stories among the playoff teams I think would make this show even more fun. It's not even a term. But anyway, more fun. All right, coming up next, we'll talk more about the NBA Game 6, but Game 7 tonight in the NHL, and that's going to be a doozy. SB Nation AM.
Watch elite athletes from around the world vie for the 2019 American Flag Football League Championship on Facebook and YouTube by following at Flag Football and on the AFFL website, AFFL.com. Games start at noon Eastern, Saturday and Sunday, June 15th and 16th. SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I am pulling for the St. Louis Blues tonight. I can't wait for tonight's game. I can't name five St. Louis Blues players. I think I can, actually. I can. But I'm not six, but I'm totally pulling for him tonight. Because think about tonight, game seven in Boston. If the Bruins win and the Cup's in the house and it's in Boston, you know what this is going to do.
Boston wins the championship.
Well done, more gear.
Can't believe Boston pulled out another championship.
I think I told you this before, but I have a friend on Facebook who... he comments on how much money he spends on gear every time he has to buy new championship gear for any of the Boston teams that win. And he's got this running total of how much money he spends.
Oh,
it's really funny, but at the same time, it's really annoying. But he's been doing it now for a long time.
Of course he has.
He just posts like, spent $52 on a shirt, sweatshirt, and a hat for my Red Sox championship. And he does it for every one of them, just to kind of rub it in that he just can't. He's got a closet full of these t-shirts, hoodies, hats, whatever it is that he has. It drives me nuts.
Since 2001. But listen,
that's right. Since 2001, it's been pretty much nonstop. It's crazy. Like my son, his whole life, he's 17. His whole life is nothing but Boston winning everything. That's all he knows. And every now and then somebody else gets to win one on borrowed time. And then it goes back to Boston. But the Bruins and the Celtics have not been as good as like the Patriots and the Red Sox. You know, the Boston Celtics have only won one in this massive stretch.
I know the Bruins have won one. They're kind of the odd man out.
Yeah.
I mean, they went to two, but they lost one.
The Bruins have gone to two and lost one as well. They lost to the Blackhawks in a game six in which I think the Chicago scored like three goals in 2 minutes or something like that to win the game. But you know, it was funny too, because in that Stanley Cup finals, it was really, I'm trying to remember the details, but they were playing the Blackhawks and they gave up. They had the game, they were going to force a game seven, but the Blackhawks scored like, again, I think it was like three goals in like 2 or 3 minutes in the final 2 or 3 minutes of the game. And the Blackhawks won the cup. And I remember at the time, because I was doing a bit with Bob Ryan, I was filling in on this network, and I was doing this bit with Bob Ryan, and I said, so Bob, like when somebody in Boston talks about game six, do you have to ask which one, you know, going back to the 86 game? And he kind of chuckled about it. It was a big deal at the time. But over time, it didn't become that. It didn't become something we all remembered. And you know, it was like, oh, yeah, the collapse of game six. Maybe in Boston it is, but it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't have the same impact as the Mets rallying like they did in game six of the World Series. But nevertheless, that's what happened to the Bruins. But I think a lot of that is because the city has been just so swept up in success that any defeat, no matter how bad the defeat is, doesn't feel like it has any permanent stain on the psyche of Bostonians, because the reality of it is that they're swimming in success. Whereas even in 86, despite the fact that the Celtics were the NBA champions, the Red Sox had gone through decades and decades and decades of futility. And so the moment that they could have ended this really long World Series drought, the fact that the Mets rallied in game six to force the game seven, which they ultimately won, has more of impact than the Bruins, who had won the cup just 2 years prior to the collapse against the Blackhawks, could make any sort of memory, if you will. But nevertheless, tonight's a night that the cup could be celebrated in Boston and they could have another duck boat parade. Whereas the people of St. Louis, they got a franchise in the NHL in 1967. right? What are we talking about? 52 years? And they've never won the cup. They don't know what it's like to win the cup. And tonight, they're one game away from doing it. The cool thing about tonight's game is home ice is extremely important. It hasn't been important in this series, right? The St. Louis Blues have won twice already in Boston. And likewise, the Bruins have won twice in St. Louis. So it doesn't have the same sort of effect in this series as you normally think it would. Now, tonight could be different. Tonight, home ice, the feeling of playing on home ice could permeate through for the Bruins, and they could win the cup. But listen, I told you guys yesterday, even if you're not a fan of hockey, watch tonight. Watch a game seven. Watch an elimination type of winner wins the cup, loser goes home, you know, empty-handed except for a conference championship. Because what you'll see tonight, if it's a close game, now if it's a blowout, forget it, don't worry about it. But if it's a close game in the third period, you're going to see the drama of sport like nothing else can give you, right? One of the things about postseason is that in most sports, postseason, it's a different animal in the way that we, you know, obviously look at it because the games matter more than the regular season. Well, you say this about baseball. The intricacies of baseball are there when you go to a game in July, right? But you just don't notice them. Right. When a pitcher is analyzing the lineup and the catcher is analyzing the lineup and they've got the game called and the way they call pitches, that goes on in the same in July as it does in the postseason. But in the postseason, it's magnified because when you get to the postseason and a guy is at the plate, now you're getting information overload in terms of the analysis of they're trying to throw a fastball away or a curveball inside or a slider or whatever it is that they're trying to throw because that may be his weak pitch or whatever. His hot zone is here. His cold zone is here. You start getting all of this information, so the intensity of it feels the same. It's the same thing tonight. The guys are going to play hockey the same way, but because if it's close in the third period, there's going to be some nerves. There's going to be some tension. There's going to be some real feeling of anxiety, and it's going to permeate through because any moment somebody could make a mistake that costs them the Stanley Cup. Now, I hope it's close. I hope it's not a blowout. I hope the third period isn't 4-0 or anything like that. Because this sport that still tries to find its footing, and it's hard to do at times, it deserves, at least on its best stage, the best possible story that could draw you in. Right? I think I could take any sports fan who says, listen, I don't care for hockey. It's just not my thing. But I could sit them down in the third period of a close hockey game in game seven and I go, whoever scores next is likely to win the championship. And then also, and again, not to be over dramatic here, but especially if it's the Blues, and I'm not taking anything away from Boston because there's players on the Bruins that weren't around in 2011 that didn't get a chance to win the cup with the Bruins at that time. But especially with the Blues, the emotion of winning the Stanley Cup, it is a great moment in sports. It is a great celebration in sports because the trophy is so important and it matters that they win that. I mean, guys will cry because their whole life, since they were a little kid, their whole life was, I don't get to touch that until I win that. And then they get to win that and then they finally get to hold it. It's pretty cool. Look, I mean, when Ray Bourque of the Bruins got traded to the Avalanche, everyone in Boston was so happy because the Bruins were not in a position to give him a Stanley Cup. They had tried on a number of times to give him a Stanley Cup and they couldn't do it. And then he finally wins it. And it's just, there's an elation. There's a feeling of excitement. They gave him a parade in Boston when he won a cup with the Avalanche in Colorado. That's how big of a deal it was to the people in Boston. Because they loved Ray Bourque so much and they wanted him to capture the cup. You know, you talk about athletes that have never won. You know, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl or whatever. But we don't talk about him not being able to hold the trophy. Right? We don't get to say, well, Dan Marino never hoisted the Vince Lombardi trophy. Right? We never say that. But the cup is different. Right? Golfers, right? We have great golfers. Lee Trevino never wore a green jacket. You know what that means, right? You know what that means. He never won the Masters. But, and the cup is on that same level. They don't say he never won a championship. He never won the Stanley Cup. He never won that item. He never got to touch that. He played his whole career and he never got the holy grail of the sport, the thing everyone is after. You want to talk about pure joy? You ever want to see an athlete in pure joy? Alexander Ovechkin. Just Google YouTube him winning the cup last year with the Capitals. You couldn't peel the smile off his face. I mean, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It's unlike anything else. It really is unlike anything else. Because, again, like a golfer practicing when he's a kid, this putt to win the Masters, these guys play for the cup. They play for that item. And when they get to touch it and hold it and carry it around and skate around with it, it's unbelievable. And Mike Emmerich, tonight, no matter how close that game is, whatever the result is, and again, it could be 7-0, it could be 1-0, whatever the result is, there's nobody better in my industry than giving you a moment than Mike Emmerich. He really is. I mean, there are people that you can make the argument that are equal in the love for their sport, but nobody's better. Nobody is better at delivering that moment than Mike Emmerich. He loves hockey and he understands what tonight is going to be about. He understands the meaning of tonight when the cup is brought out. It's a sight to see. And so again, even if you don't like, you don't get the sport, if you love sports, you'll love the moment. So watch it tonight. All right, coming up, we'll talk a little bit about what went on in Paris yesterday, a rout for the United States, good, bad, 13-0. I mean, it's 13-0 soccer. So I'll ask Ron what that is equates to when we come back on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so I took your advice and I watched the U.S. women yesterday. They beat Thailand 13-0. What's that like, a 100-0 in baseball? What are we talking about here? A 13-0 soccer game.
I mean, you know. That's,
is it like 80-0 in football? What do we? I mean, 13-0. I mean, come on, no, 13. Like, does Thailand even have a team?
Well, I think
did
most
they just
of their
grab
team, like
20 something
yesterday.
People and just said, "You want to run around with the world's best soccer players? Go have fun."
No, like I said yesterday, most of these foreign countries who are fielding a team for the first time, like Thailand, their best player played at USC. So most of them are American-born college players whose parents happen to have been born in another country.
Okay, so this 13-0 route was like against a good team, or what are we talking about here?
A decent team. I'll say a decent team. I mean, a competitive team. They're nowhere on the level.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. A 13-0 route. They had only two shots on goal the whole game.
They're competitive. They're nowhere near the level of what the United States produces.
I think I could put a college team out there and do a little better job than that.
Well, that's what that is. It's basically a college team mixed in with maybe a few scrubs. It's Alabama versus, name your D3 school.
What's a D3 school doing in the Women's World Cup?
That's how they qualify. I mean, you have certain regions who just, soccer for women just isn't as important yet.
So did, well, US I understand men, that, but did, US didn't Thailand should, have to play good soccer in order to get to this point?
They had to play soccer to get to this point.
That's it?
there's regional finals, so they had to win out in Asia or be finished in the top three in Asia, which they were able to do. I mean, I'm going to assume China is always a really good team, a good squad coming out of there. Japan won the World Cup a few years ago. Thailand probably finished third and just was able to qualify.
It was so bad. It was so bad.
But I mean, them scoring 13 goals isn't a bad thing. Because when it comes down to it, the first tiebreaker is always going to be goal differential.
No, I agree. I had no problems with this.
The other two teams in the group aren't going to try to run up the score on Thailand as well. I mean, it could be really brutal looking.
Yep, I totally agree. Listen, they took a lot of shots. People on social media took a lot of shots by saying, hey, look, they should have backed off. Even the analysis at the end of the game, one of the guys at the desk was like, hey, they should have just backed off. And everybody, like Lawless, I think, was on the panel. Heather O'Reilly was on the panel or something. She was like, no, because that doesn't count. Listen, I do the Mike Krzyzewski thing, right? Krzyzewski, when he's got his team out there and they're playing like Alabama A&M and they're routing them, the reason that they're routing him is that he is still always coaching, right? This United States team, every second that they're on the pitch in a game is a valuable second. It's a valuable minute. They may have all been together for a long period of time, but when you're in this setting, it's always valuable. You never give that time away.
Yeah,
right. You should always be working on where are you supposed to be? Where is positioning? Where are you, you know, no matter what the score is, because when we play tougher competition, we don't get those minutes back.
Right.
When we were goofing off.
When they face Chile, that'll be the next game. I believe that game's on Sunday. It's not going to be 13-0. Hopefully it's still a shutout, but it's not going to be easy for the U.S. Not as easy when they face Thailand. And then especially when they get to the knockout stages.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're talking, you know, barely squeaking by, you know, 1-0. I'm hoping that this is a good thing, you know, shows what's to come for the U.S. women that, you know, hey, they're going to be so dominant, they're going to win the World Cup because, you know, that's what we want.
The only thing that I would criticize just a little bit, but it's very, very minor, so I want to make this very clear. It's only minor. When you get your 7th goal and 8th goal and 9th goal and 10th goal, you don't have to celebrate as if you're getting your first goal.
Right.
You can kind of just get, you know, you can just kick it in, you know, score, and then just kind of high five each other and just go back to your business. First couple of goals, of course, right? You're getting some nerves out. You know you have the lead. You're going to win the match. But when you're putting your 8th goal on the board, you don't need to rub it in by dancing and jumping up and down and freaking out. Like, they freaked out on every single goal, all 13 goals. I thought that was a little much. I mean, after a while, you're like, look, we got to score these. You don't like it. We're not really too happy with it. It's the way it is.
But run it
up. But we're
up.
Moving on. But absolutely, I totally agree with you. Run it up, because you're right. Goal differential does matter.